Thank you so much, Bronwyn, and thank you for having me here today. So yeah, my name's Sabrina, and this morning I'm going to talk to you about how artisan cheese might be able to impact the gut microbiota and what those potential impacts are for health. So just a quick background to me. So I started out in science. I did my undergrad in biomedical sciences before finding myself working as an assistant cheesemaker upon graduating, where I really fell in love with cheesemaking and the way it combines the science with food and the art to make a fantastic product. So I continued working there for a few years before taking a break to do a master's in microbiology during the pandemic, before returning to the Kryn Creamery to continue to work, where I'm now executive cheesemaker, but also studying my PhD part-time at the University of Reading to address the kind of research concern, how might artisan cheese have a potential impact on the gut microbiota? So first of all, why are we going to bother worrying about what cheese might do for our gut microbiome? So as I'm sure many of you know, the gut microbiome has been an increasingly talked about topic over the last few years, with loads of research going into it in the last sort of 15 to 20 years. And it's shown to be very closely aligned with overall health, with dysbiosis, which is an imbalance of the gut microbiome becoming associated with things like chronic digestive disorders, metabolic issues, even mental health via the gut-brain axis. And what we know, as we just heard, is that fermented foods have the potential to be functional foods, in that they have probiotics present due to the consequence of the fermentation, and also metabolic end products, which can be really good for our guts. And if you look at things like kefir, there's sort of loads of old wives' tales saying that it can help you live longer, and actually now we're starting to sort of look at why, and that's really interesting. And of course, cheese is a fermented product, and a lot of the cultures that we use in cheesemaking are actually cultures that have recognized probiotic potential. So a lot of the starter cultures, including those listed, but also many other starter lactic acid bacteria, and some ripening cultures too. So Propionibacterium freudian reishi has been talked about recently as like a potential novel probiotic, and there is research going into that, even in the lab at Reading, to find out what that might be able to do for us as well. And what's also really good about cheese is that the way it's made up in terms of the matrix of protein which binds fat is it actually has a protective effect on the cultures throughout digestion as it passes through the harsh processes like all your stomach acids and the different enzymes involved in the small intestine to increase the likelihood that they will reach the gut microbiome intact where they can then have an effect. So when we started out investigating, what we wanted to do was characterise the cheeses that we make at the Nettlebed Creamery to figure out what changes are going on through the ripening process, and then we can figure out what's present in the final product, which we are then eating, and then we can continue to investigate what happens when we eat them. So if you're not familiar with Nettlebed Creamery cheeses, we have Bix, which is a soft triple cream mold-ripened cheese, Hymer, which is a semi-soft washed rind cheese, and Witheridge and Hay, which is a semi-hard alpine-style cheese, obviously aged in hay. So what we did is we took all three cheeses at different stages of the ripening process and did some different analyses on them, so biochemical analysis in the form of NMR, which unfortunately I haven't got time to show you today, but then we also did microbiological analysis in terms of the sequencing, so I'm going to show you this data. So here we can see the genus and species that are present in the different cheeses at the different stages of ripening. So if we start off looking at Bix, so both young and mature samples are really dominated by Lactococcus lactis, which is the main starter lactic acid bacteria we use in this cheese. So it doesn't really change an awful lot, but this is mostly due to the fact that this method of DNA sequencing will only be capturing bacterial DNA and not fungal DNA as well. And Bix is a mold-ripened cheese, so we can anticipate that there's actually a lot more diversity going on in there, and if we'd look at the yeast profile and mold profile, we'd see something quite different. But the main sort of take-home here is that the bacterial composition is dominated by the starter lactic acid bacteria that has probiotic potential. And then moving on to Hymer, which is these three bars in the middle. So again, the young sample is really dominated by the starter lactic acid bacteria we use for Hymer. So that is Lactococcus lactis, Streptococcus thermophilus, and Lactobacillus delbrueckii. So we can see those in red, blue, and turquoise. But then what's interesting is as the cheeses develop and as they grow their rind while we're washing them, their profile really starts to change and we get a lot more diversity there. So here we can see the growth of many more different rind bacteria, such as the Glutamobacter, Staphylococcus, some Brevibacterium, Carinibacterium. And even in the mature sample, we can see like a little band of pink. That's our Propionibacterium, which, as I said before, is a potential novel probiotic candidate. That we add to the starter cultures for making Highmore to give us some like poles in the paste and also some interesting flavours. But our sort of take home here, again, is that we've got sort of over 60% of the bacteria present in the final product are these starter lactic acid bacteria with probiotic potential. And then, so our young Witheridge sample is quite similar to our young Highmore sample in that it's really dominated by the starter lactic acid bacteria we use. But then when we move from between the young and the mid samples of Witheridge, we see a massive increase in the amount of bacteria that are just labelled others. So these are potentially bacteria which are so numerous but so small in quantity that we just can't put them on the bar graph, but also potentially represents the DNA of some bacteria that we haven't identified yet. So we can know their DNA is there, but we don't know what they are. And the key thing for the difference between the young and the mid Witheridge sample is that that's when we added the hay. So the hay gets added when the cheese is about a week old. And so the hay is somehow changing the profile like quite significantly. The hay we do bake to sort of sterilize it because we need to for a food safety perspective. So it's not necessarily introducing more bacteria, but it is potentially acting as a source of protein and fiber for other bacteria to grow on the rind that might not necessarily otherwise. But again, for our mature Witheridge sample, take-home message is that about 30% of those bacteria there are starter lactic acid bacteria with probiotic potential. So then we need to think about how do we investigate cheese in terms of what it's doing to the gut microbiome. So there have been some observational studies which look at sort of common genetic markers in the gut of people who eat cheese regularly versus those who don't. But then we also have some human studies where people have been, researchers have been feeding people cheese for a specific amount of time to then see what changes can occur in terms of the bacteria that are present. So for instance, this study from a little while ago was looking at what happens when you feed people camembert every day for 4 weeks. And then what can change in terms of the lactic acid bacteria present in their guts. So they did also compare it to feeding people just cream cheese, which was inoculated with dead lactic acid bacteria, and they found that nothing really much happened there, but it did in the people eating camembert. So for Lactococcus lactis, we see that after an exclusion period of 2 weeks of eating no cheese, when they started eating the camembert, this went right up, and so it significantly increased. Although it did then drop off after 2 weeks of eating no cheese again, so it's showing that that elevated population isn't being sustained. Leuconostoc mesenteroides, however, it sort of increased during consumption, but it was also still elevated after the washout period, indicating that these cultures are persisting in the gut microbiome. They are dropping off a little bit, but it's so we might need to continue eating camembert, which I'm sure is good news. But yeah, it's showing that they're surviving in the gut and they're persisting. Plantarum is interesting as well. So they found an elevated amount during the consumption period, which did drop off. But what was really interesting about the plantarum is that when they quantified the amount present in the camembert and compared it to the amount present in the stool, there was a lot more present in the stool than there was in the original cheese, indicating that these cultures are actually growing in the gut as well. So they're not just surviving, they are growing as well. And then we have a slightly more recent study looking at what happens when you feed people Parmesan every day for 7 days, and then with a washout period afterwards of 7 days without cheese. And what they were looking at is the populations of bifidobacterium present in their stool. And so during the cheese consumption, the amount of bifidobacterium steadily increased, and it continued to increase even after the washout period. So even when they weren't eating cheese anymore, the bacteria was still growing. But what was also interesting about this study is that they split the group into two. So half the group were drinking milk every day, 200 milliliters, and the other half were drinking no milk at all. And the people drinking milk had, they were this yellow line here, so they had that increased growth of bifidobacteria. The people drinking no milk had some growth, but it was not nearly as significant as the ones up here. So something about the milk is like augmenting the growth of the bif. And the other way we look at changes in the gut microbiota is with in vitro studies, which is what we do at the University of Reading. So we always start with in vitro work, so we can sort of establish a groundwork of our hypotheses before we would then continue onto a human study. So for this, we use what are known as batch culture fermentations, which is this lovely vessel here. So we'll start, we'll put whatever we're interested in into this vessel to see what happens. And you can use this for anything. So there are people in the lab who are looking at novel probiotics, different types of prebiotics, seaweed, even tea, all sorts. And what this is a tiny little gut model. So this is representing the distal colon in the gut, which is the last stage of your large intestine. So we have this little glass jar. It's sort of insulated, so it's like hollow around the outside. through which you can pass warm water, which keeps it at 37 degrees, so it's more physiologically relevant. We are also pumping it with nitrogen, so that's bubbling away through the media, which keeps it anaerobic, because obviously there's no oxygen in your gut. We also have a pH probe in there and acid and base feeders to keep the pH at, again, a physiologically relevant level. So for the distal colon, that's about pH 6.8. Inside the vessel, we've got a media, which is comprised of the basic nutrients that would be present from a very basic diet. We then inoculate it with some gut microbiota taken from a stool. And then we would add our cheese. But before we add our cheese, we have to put it through a pre-digestion simulation. So that's putting it through the different stages of digestion as it would in the body. So you have a chewing phase, we have a stomach phase, we have a small intestine phase, adding all the different enzymes at the different stages. So by the end, you've got a product which is largely representative of what your cheese would be before it goes into the large intestine. So we keep this going nice and warm, bubbling away for 48 hours. We'll take samples at different stages so we can look at the different bacterial changes and also the metabolites that are produced by the gut bacteria. So for the first round of this experiment, I took all three cheeses that we make in Nettlebed Creamery, as well as a version of Witheridge that had been made with unpasteurized milk. So all the other cheeses are pasteurized cheeses. We just had one batch we made with unpasteurized, and we thought it would be interesting to see if there's any difference. We compared it against negative control. And what we see here are the short-chain fatty acid that were produced by these bacteria. So this is a really good way of measuring the metabolic activity of these bacteria to see what's kind of active and producing these short-chain fatty acids. So up here, well, what we can see is that Bix and Hymor, in any of them, didn't really produce anything significantly more than the negative control. Witheridge, however, both the raw Witheridge and the Witheridge and hay were producing significant amounts of acetate at 48 hours. And for propionate, both Witheridge and hay and raw Witheridge, again, were doing that, although Witheridge and hay was producing more significant amounts of propionate and at 24 and 48 hours as well. So what we started to think here was that there's something interesting going on with the Witheridge in particular, more so than the other cheeses, which is why we wanted to investigate it further. Further to that, another key difference for the raw Witheridge is that that was not aged in hay. So as well as being made with unpasteurized milk, the other difference is that there was no hay. And so with these increases in propionate, we started to wonder if the hay was having a role there. So we took this further. We did another round of batch cultures, although we slightly changed the procedure. So we were changing the pH throughout the 48 hours to represent transit through all different parts of the colon. So not just the distal colon, we're also looking at the proximal and transverse. And then we wanted to compare it with Witheridge without hay to see how much the hay has a role here. And also cheddar as a kind of positive control representing a cheese that's really popular and eaten by a lot of people. I think for this one we used Cathedral City. And again, we've got the short-chain fatty acid data here. And what we can see is like all three cheeses are producing a lot of acetate. So that's really exciting. And they're all producing a lot of propionate too. But Witheridge and hay is producing far more significant amounts of propionate than either of the other two. So this really made us think the hay is definitely doing something here. And we're not sure if that's acting as a prebiotic in terms of when you're eating it and it's going into the gut, it's interacting or it's stimulating the growth of bacteria in a way that's beneficial, or if it's stimulating the growth of other bacteria on the rind during aging, which is kind of indicated by our sequencing data, to produce more bacteria that might be having a beneficial effect as well. So I just want you to hold on to that data just for a second. And I'm going to go back to our why cheese question and talk about cheese and health. So present company accepted, I think a lot of people would probably tell you that cheese is not healthy, but it's actually very nutrient rich, of course. And it has been shown to be beneficial for cardiovascular health in a number of ways. Also weight gain. So a study that was looking at the risk of developing obesity found that people who were eating full fat cheese are actually less likely to develop obesity than those eating reduced fat. I've got some results from this study here, which was a meta-analysis where they took hundreds of different studies which were trying to correlate cheese consumption with different health outcomes. And they found no particular positive or negative association between cheese consumption and all-cause cancer or metabolic issues, but they did find a negative association between cheese consumption and all-cause mortality, cardiovascular disease, coronary heart disease, stroke incidence, and also fracture risk. So this means that the more cheese people who are eating cheese were less likely to develop those things. And this effect was sort of peaking at around 30 to 40 grams consumption a day and then tailing off. We also want to talk about cholesterol levels. So again, your doctor would probably tell you if you've got high cholesterol, you should eat less cheese. But actually, research is starting to show the opposite. Although cheese may not necessarily be detrimental, but also it could be beneficial. So this study was comparing the consumption of full-fat Irish cheddar cheese against reduced fat and also a butter and calcium supplemented diet, which was sort of meant to replicate the fat content and calcium content of cheese, but in a different format. And as you can see, the people eating the full-fat cheddar had the greatest reduction of cholesterol and LDL cholesterol overall. So indicating that maybe cheese is actually good for your cholesterol. So when we're talking about cheese and how it might be good for your cardiovascular health, we need to kind of think about the mechanisms why that might be. So there are a few. So we've got the production of bioactive peptides, which occur during the cheese ripening process as part of the fermentation. Some of these have been shown to affect insulin sensitivity, making it helpful for regulating your blood glucose level. And some of them can also inhibit angiotensin 1 converting enzyme, which is an enzyme that increases your vasoconstriction, so it tightens your blood vessels. So by inhibiting this enzyme, you're reducing that constriction and reducing blood pressure. Also, what's important is the food matrix of cheese in the way that the protein binding will trap the fat and stop the release of, or reduce the release of fat in the small intestine. So you're actually absorbing less fat when you're eating cheese versus other high-fat products. They found that fecal fat excretion will increase after cheese consumption. And there's also a role to play with the way that calcium and the fat interact, which boosts the efficiency of lipid metabolism. The other mechanism, which I'm most excited about, is that the cheese might be able to interact with the gut microbiome to produce more short-chain fatty acids, including propionate, which has been shown to reduce cholesterol synthesis in the liver and also reduce the absorption of dietary cholesterol. So if we remember our results from the fed batch cultures, the witherage and hay were producing significant amounts of propionate, more significant than either the cheddar or the witherage without hay. So this then leads us to our main central hypothesis, which is that we've got our witherage and hay, which has probiotics present in the paste due to the starter cultures that we use, a potential prebiotic in the form of hay on the rind, together making this cheese a symbiotic cheese. When you eat this cheese, the paste protects the cultures throughout digestion, enabling it to reach the large intestine intact, where it can interact with the gut microbiome, produce more propionate, which then will lead to reduced cholesterol levels. This is obviously really exciting, but we need to prove it. So what we do next is a human intervention study, which is currently going on. So what we're doing is we're trying to recruit people with an elevated total cholesterol, feed them cheese every day for 12 weeks, either cheddar or the witherage and hay, and see if this can affect changes in blood lipids, but also we're looking at the stool metabolome, the stool microbiome and the urine metabolome, which is the amount of metabolites that get produced by the gut microbiome, absorbed by the body, and eventually end up in the urine. So this trial is currently ongoing. We're hoping to wrap it up by the end of this year, analyse all the data, and have results available by the end of next year. At the same time, my PhD will kind of be finishing up. But we are still recruiting, so watch this space. And if anyone's interested and in the Reading area, I do need more participants, so please come find me. So that just leaves a few thank yous to my supervisors, who are wonderful and very supportive for all their supervision. The other people in the Food Microbial Sciences Lab, who are, again, very helpful and kind. And to all everyone at Nestle Bit Creamery, so to the production team, who make amazing cheese and are really, really wonderful to work with. Rose, my boss, who is incredibly supportive, and I'm really appreciative of her giving me the opportunity to do this research. And Patrick, who has moved on from the creamery now, but was the source of a lot of inspiration for this research. Thank you to all of you for listening as well. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. Yeah, so witherage and hay kind of came about. We were making a different cheese beforehand, which was aged without hay, but we kept getting trouble with the rind. It was developing really thick, bitter, nasty rinds, and we were doing a lot of R&D to try and figure out a better way of making it. And we came across the sort of method which is more popular in France and Italy of aging in hay, and we thought we'd try that. The farm where we make the cheese is organic, and we've got a lot of organic hay, and we thought it would be interesting to try that. And what we found is that it works really well. The cheese takes on some of the flavour of the hay and gives us a much more interesting profile than it had before. So we haven't tried any other coatings, but we... Well, that's up to you. It's a natural rind, so you can eat it. In terms of actually knowing the benefits of the hay, because people don't usually eat hay, we don't have a lot of data about what hay can do in the gut microbiome. But certainly for our research, we're finding that comparing the hay that's ate, the cheese that's aged with hay versus without hay, it does seem to be making quite a key difference. Potentially, yeah. So we haven't done any deep strain analysis on the different probiotic bacteria that are present. We're sort of assuming that the propionic bacterium we can see in the hymor is from the starter cultures. There is a tiny little bit in the witherage, which again, maybe it's coming from the hay. We sort of hope that what we're doing is killing off, well, we want to kill off anything nasty, basically. Hay is quite difficult to bake, though, because it's really good at insulating. So it's quite tricky to warm up. But yeah, I'm not 100% sure on that yet. Yeah, I mean, that's a really good question. We haven't got any detailed analysis. It's more sort of anecdotal because we know that occasionally if we run out of hay or we need to use the cheese for something else and we don't wrap it in hay. So we backpack all of our witherage for 6 months and then we open it to allow it to age open. And the witherage that had been backpacked without any hay, there's a lot more moisture sat on top of the cheese. The hay does seem to absorb quite a lot during the aging process. So that's definitely a potential factor there, yeah. We don't really need an awful lot, so I think we've just bought our next supply of hay, which is like 30 kilos or something.
Oh,
so. Yeah, that's true. Well, the farm is all organic, so they're producing all the organic hay with different herbal lays and stuff. When we're sort of getting the hay, they've sort of pulled it all up and we just get like a sort of subset of all of that. So I guess it's kind of like an average of what all the cows might be eating, I think. Yeah, exactly.
About the hay, which is clearly very interesting, is it the hay or is it, how do you get the hay to stick to the cheese? In other words, might it be something about the process rather than the hay itself?
Yeah, it could be. So when we use our hay, we've got it all sort of dried and chopped up. We'll sort of rub it on the surface. When the cheese is about a week old, it's still a little bit damp, so it does stick quite well. And then when you're putting it through the vac pack, that again helps the hay like really stick, and you get a lot of anaerobic fermentation going on with the hay on top of the cheese.
So you can do it in the backpack?
We do for the first 6 months, and then we'll open up the vac pack, put fresh hay on. Again, the cheese is usually quite damp when it comes out of the vac bag, so the hay sticks quite well. Then we will sort of age it open on wire racks. It gets turned every week and rubbed. We sort of rub off the excess hay, and it helps spread. So we get some like Penicillium mold growing on the wither ridge, and it helps us spread that about a bit. Yeah, so just with a hand, you just rub the top, rub the sides, flip over, rub again.
So might it be a hand issue? I mean, I'm just trying to see, is it a hand issue or a hay issue?
Potentially. I mean, we would be doing something similar with the cheeses without hay as well, just to sort of help prevent any kind of abnormal mould growth. But yeah, maybe.
I'm just so intrigued. Oh.
I have a question that's not about hay.
Oh, great. Potentially. I mean, I'm not sure if they were drinking milk at the same time as the cheese, but they were also, this study, oh, that was part of like a bigger study, which was looking at bifidobacteria that were present in the stool of the cows, and then how that potentially was going through the milk and then affecting the cheese. So obviously if the bifidobacteria is growing really well in the milk, there might be something in there that's like help stimulating the growth. And then when you're adding the cheese as well, it's got that kind of compound effect.
Yeah.